Welcome back to the History of South Africa podcast with me, your host, Des Latham. This is episode 181 and shots fired. We're with the Amaxhosa under Maxhoma and Sandile and the British soldiers under Lieutenant Colonel George MacKinnon fighting on the steep cliffs of Bomber Pass. When the firing began, one of the companies of the 73rd Regiment had just entered the pass, and its Captain J.C. Gawler explained later about the confusion. Last episode, we heard all about the long column of British troops strung out more than 2 kilometres up this pass, and how MacKinnon, along with the Xhosa police, alongside the British and Cape Mountain Rifles, had emerged at the top. Bugles blasted off below, sounding the advance call, but the British troops were not sure what that meant, run up the slopes or turn to fight their attackers. What was even more bizarre, in spite of the volleys going off and the sounds of Xhosa muskets echoing around the rocky cliffs, MacKinnon refused to believe that his column was being attacked. This was supposed to be a show of force, said Governor Harry Smith, not a real attempt at arresting Sandile, the Nqika chief. Major John Jarvis Bissett managed to convince the Lieutenant Colonel that Xhosa were in fact attacking. MacKinnon regarded the Amaxhosa as savages who couldn't properly organize a fight of this sort. He'd also convinced himself that Maxhoma and the others, who'd been hell-bent on war, were being ignored by the Amaxhosa chiefs, a very bad miscalculation. His hesitation, say some, was actually caused by shock, having to accept the truth. He'd been attacked. Only the very best commanders and leaders are able to quickly rally themselves in a time of crisis, and I'm afraid MacKinnon was not one of those. Bissett was, however, and he appeared to take over matters to some extent. It was his duty, he said, to plunge back down the gorge to take command of the ragged column, and MacKinnon agreed. Bissett and his koikoi orderly turned their horses around and charged down the pass as thousands of Amaxhosa warriors descended the opposite bank of the Kaiskamma River. They were trying to outflank the column caught inside the pass. Hundreds of British soldiers were in real peril. It was Bissett's birthday, and his gift was to somehow try and survive this deadly situation. So he hauled out his double-barreled gun and was confronted by 4 ammunition horses charging up the pass. All the horses were injured, bleeding from wounds. The packs they carried had slipped, and moments later, Bissett himself was hit by an Amaxhosa musket ball fired by a warrior at point-blank range. Bissett swayed on his horse and shot the man. According to observers, including 2 British troops struggling to catch the ammunition horses, the warrior shouted, "I have hit him!" And Bissett shouted back, "I have got it!" Perhaps this is myth, but it's corroborated in reports. Moments later, Dr. Stewart appeared, leaning against the cliff face, blood streaming from his chest. Another shot rang out and Stewart was hit in the head, killing him instantly. Bissett continued charging down the pass. British troops were cowering behind rocks and followed him out of the pass. And after a few more minutes, the Cape Mounted Rifles commander collapsed from loss of blood. But his courage had meant that many of the British troops had managed to make it out of the death zone. They had broken out of the pass and joined the Amaxhosa police and Khoikhoi troops. The warriors were on higher ground, and for some reason, at this moment, they stopped firing. It was only then that some of the British officers realized that the Amaxhosa police unit had not fired a shot. In fact, they had retreated constantly, and when they were retreating, Sandile's warriors stopped shooting. The police unit had survived unscathed. More than suspicious, it appeared they had been spared by the Amaxhosa warriors. The Amaxhosa attack had cut the British column in half. Down below, at the entrance to the pass, Lieutenant Armitage and his company of men, who had been tasked with protecting the pack horses, knew exactly where he was. Before he entered Bomber Pass, the officer had memorized the contours of a rather rudimentary map, but this was going to save his life. Armitage and his men fought their way forward from rock to rock and tree to tree, up the steep cliffs. They avoided the path, a thin winding route between the cliffs and the river. Instead, they broke into the bush, hacking their way through the thickets until they popped up on the summit and rejoined MacKinnon. By now, 12 British troops were dead, including their medical officer. At least 12 others, including Bissett, were wounded. Somehow, this disheveled and battered force staggered to their original destination, Kaiskamma Hook, near Robert Niven's mission station, Uniondale. not to be confused with Uniondale in the Karoo, as I've mentioned. Living here was one of the most enigmatic South Africans, his name Tiyo Soga. This is a name that has been elevated through the ages, part of the Soga family. He'd been the first black minister to be ordained overseas, and overseas happened to be Scotland. He married a Scots woman and been the first to translate an English classic into isiXhosa. And which classic, you may ask? Pilgrim's Progress. The first continued. His eldest son was the first black doctor in the Cape. His second eldest son, John Henderson Soga, is revered as the first amaXhosa historian. Third son was a vet. All his sons were educated in Scotland, but that was in the future. Right now, Tiyo had made his way back to Kaiskamma Hoek with his Scots bride, aged 21. As the lovebirds disembarked from their voyage in Port Elizabeth, a settler shouted they were the shame of Scotland. Soga had made his way to the Hoek, and here he was, along with his Scots wife, witnessing the Bomber disaster. Way down south at Burnshill near Fort Hare, news arrived that the shooting had been heard at Bomber Pass. Governor Harry Smith was there. He flipped off the report, saying it was some cock and bull story. I don't believe it. In a kind of surreal and uncanny twist, Smith sent for Sandile's brother, Xoxo, to ask if he'd heard any firing. Xoxo said there was apparently a few shots heard, but it was a windy day and no one knew for sure. Xoxo was in the ravines over the Bomber Pass. He'd been in the battle, letting rip with his musket. Back at Kaiskamma Hoek, the Sorgers and the Nivens were the first to hear about the British being routed at Bomber Pass. McKinnon's force arrived there at 3 in the afternoon of the battle, and the soldiers made camp some distance from the station. Niven looked at them through his scope and at first saw nothing untoward. Then members of the Khoi Khoi Cape Mounted Rifles rode up, bringing him a note warning that the missionaries should leave for their own safety. A council of Sandile's, Vika, lived alongside the Nivens, and the missionary asked him to meet with McKinnon alongside him. Right now, the missionary thought that the attack had been the work of a handful of mercenaries or brigands. He also refused to believe this was actually a full-scale war. The mission station was exposed, but the Scotsman of the cloth didn't want to leave. Eventually, however, he realized the danger and decided to move his family to Toomey Mission Station the following morning. Christmas Day was full of moaning soldiers who'd slept on the open ground, muskets by their sides. They began marching at 4 in the morning, and still McKinnon followed Smith's orders that the guns be left unloaded as they went. They had to march down the hill on the eastern side, a longer march than the way up, taking them through the undulating crater on the top of the Amatola Mountains. This was open country, characterized by a proper wagon track, making another ambush more difficult to achieve. The warriors kept pace with the British soldiers, biding their time, and for the young and experienced regiment troops, this was the start of a notable Christmas martyrdom. Niven prepared his family for the 38-kilometer trek to Toomey. There were only 5 horses for the party of 9. Some walked, some rode. Their route was in the opposite direction to the British soldiers, cutting into the Toomey Valley deep through side ridges and a few streams, then 2 tributaries of the Toomey River. By midday, they'd covered only half the distance. So far, it had been peaceful. Yet, as they passed the kraals, war cries could be heard within each. Meanwhile, at Toomey Mission Station, John Forbes Cumming had awoke to the news of the Bomber Pass fiasco. An amaXhosa elder from nearby warned that all military villages across British Kaffraria would be targeted. Henry Calderwood, based at Fort Hare, asked Harry Smith if they had received protection, and the answer, shockingly, was no. Smith said that Xhosa had promised they were safe since Chief Nika had pronounced these stations as places of sanctuary. Would they still be? On the western side of the Amatolas, the military homes given to the British veterans were on fire. These were built on the site of the great place at Tjali, Nika's son, Makoma's brother. Here he was buried with his assegais, his guns, his saddles, and his ornaments. The Woburn ex-soldiers had opened up Tjali's grave and scattered his contents, a senseless act that was noted from the hills around by the amaXhosa. And now the Amatolas were burning once again. Another frontier war had burst into flame. As we'll hear next episode, it was going to be an extremely bitter war. Please rate the episode on your favorite channel and head off to the website desmondlatham.blog. You can sign up there for my newsletter. I'm making a few changes at the moment, including a relocation, so please bear with me for another week or two. Until next, goodbye.